VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America as we cover a number of coronavirus-related stories today. There's been a lot of issues that have been going on, and some of the things you may not be aware of that are taking place. We'll also give you an opportunity to weigh in on matters as well today on the broadcast. Well, as you know, over the weekend, President Trump said he had it, basically, with the stalled negotiations going on regarding the next coronavirus relief package here. Some question whether such a package is needed, but the president did issue four major executive orders over the weekend. The first one would provide out-of-work Americans with a extra $400 per week in supplemental aid on top of their existing unemployment benefits. We understand $100 of that, or 25%, is to come from the states. The second executive order assists renters and homeowners who are struggling to pay their lease or make their mortgage payment. The third executive order defers payroll taxes for employees making $100,000 or less per year through the end of the year. And the fourth suspends federal student loan payments and sets interest rates to 0% through the end of the year. I'm not aware of an effective date for these, but Nancy Pelosi, during an interview with CNN's Dana Bash on State of the Union on August 9th, called these executive orders on coronavirus relief absurdly unconstitutional. I think there's an interesting thought on this that came from the newamerican.com. And they say that a strict constitutionalist who believes in abiding by the 10th Amendment would say correctly that since the Constitution does not grant federal government power to provide unemployment funds, that power belongs to the states. Therefore, such funding is unconstitutional. But so are a majority of federal programs that have been put in place since Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal. Expecting Trump to unravel unconstitutional programs that not even Ronald Reagan was able to dismantle is a tall order, especially with Democrats in control of the House. That coming from the New American. Well, things have gone back into debate back and forth and negotiations. And this from FoxNews.com. White House officials and Democratic leaders remained at an impasse yesterday over another relief package with aid for cash-strapped state and local governments emerging as the latest obstacle in the negotiations. You see, the two sides are at odds right now, and it's whether states should get additional funding in the next round of emergency aid. And if they should get aid, how much should that be? Well, the Republican plan calls for the HEALS Act. That's $1 trillion. But the House has the HEROES Act calling for $3.4 trillion, of which $1 trillion of that is to fund state and local government. Now, each party is blaming the other for the discussions that are being stalled. The Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, called the Democrats' request for $1 trillion for states an absurd number, saying there's plenty of cash available already for the governments. Well, today now, again, we have Mitch McConnell speaking forth, saying that Democrats are treating the coronavirus pandemic as a political game, blaming leaders on the left for leaving struggling people to wait for critical financial aid. Right from the Senate floor today, he slammed the opposing party for blocking pandemic relief over unrelated liberal demands, and the press for covering their stonewalling like any ordinary political standoff, saying it does the nation a disservice to act like these last several weeks were just about another routine political standoff. It does struggling families and laid-off workers and stressed-out school principals and healthcare professionals a disservice to act like this has just been more ordinary Washington gridlock. He said there are life and death matters at stake, but Democrats have treated this historic national crisis as a political game. End of quote from Chuck Schumer. McConnell said from Mitch McConnell. McConnell said Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is pushing for a state and local tax deduction to be included in the fourth coronavirus stimulus package, which McConnell says makes clear he doesn't want any pandemic relief to become law unless it contains a special state and local tax carve-out for high earners in places like New York. there is a new catch on getting money, and this is coming out of the state of California. Western Journal is reporting that contracting coronavirus could lead to a substantial cash payout for residents in one California county. They're actually talking about giving payments to those who have coronavirus. This is Alameda County. This is where Oakland is located, is offering a $1,250 one-time payment to some residents who test positive for COVID-19 to encourage them to isolate themselves if they get sick. The LA Times reported that the Alameda County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved the pilot program this week. In the program, the county has allocated some $10 million for 7,500 participants. This is to be carried out over the next several weeks. One supervisor, this is Alameda Supervisor Wilma Chan, leading the program, and her policy director, Vanessa Cedinho, told the Times that the program is a response to concerns of these residents who say they cannot afford to stay home if they get COVID-19. If people are afraid to get tested or they cannot isolate safely when they're COVID positive, then our efforts to contain the virus are not going to be as successful, she said. Well, according to the Times, county officials settled in on a $1,250 figure, a gift to be given to those with COVID, because it equals the average of 2 40-hour work weeks paid at minimum wage in the city of Emeryville, which has the highest minimum wage rate in Alameda County, $16.30 an hour. A number of California's elected officials have taken rather liberal approaches to either fighting the coronavirus or distributing payouts to residents. For example, Governor Gavin Newsom has ordered that illegal immigrant households in the state receive a maximum payout of $1,000 in May. NBC News reported that. And that was in response to illegals being ineligible to receive the stimulus payments under the CARES Act of $2.2 trillion. So because federal government did not provide for illegal aliens, Governor Newsom taking $1,000 to give to each illegal immigrant. Newsom announced that $125 million would be set aside for those who are in the country illegally through a public-private disaster relief fund. Now, why is it that we need to bail out states and give more money to states who are participating in giving away millions of dollars, some $125 million, to those who are here illegally? In addition to paying illegal immigrants, California officials have enacted zero bail requirements for some crimes, have released some criminals, such as sex offenders, from custody. And let me tell you about this here just a little bit as well, because some of the matters that are going on with these release programs, folks, just is not working. This is a story that came out last week from the Daily Wire. A Maryland man held in Virginia prison on rape charges was released over coronavirus concerns, then allegedly murdered his accuser, according to police. Police tracked down and found Ibrahim, this is Buachi, in Prince George's County, Maryland, on Wednesday. Authorities sought him in connection with the death of Carla Dominguez, who has accused him of rape and testified against him in October, according to the Washington Post. When police located him, he fled in his car until he crashed. Police moved in, arrested him, that he had apparently shot himself. He remained in critical condition last Thursday. But partly on her testimony, Buaichi was indicted on 5 felony charges of rape, sodomy, strangulation, abduction, and burglary. He was held without bail in Alexandria prison facility until April 9th, when Circuit Court Judge Nolan Dawkins ordered his release on a $25,000 bond. His attorneys argued that his bail terms were worth revisiting and he should be released to house arrest because of the onset of the coronavirus pandemic. Jails and prisons have been identified as hotspots for the disease because of the facility's close quarters. Once the facility is infected, prisoners often don't have space to socially distance to keep from contracting the virus. Well, his attorney said that continuing to keep him locked up brought increased risk to him as well as his legal team if they sought to visit him in prison. Well, the jail that he was being held had issued rules over so-called contact visits between attorneys and inmates, cutting them down to a minimum. Inmates and attorneys moved to meeting by video conference, which his attorneys complained had effectively deprived him of legal counsel. Well, prosecutors argued against releasing Buachi since he was indicted for violent crimes and could be a risk to others. But the judge sided with the defense and allowed him to be released back to his home in Maryland. On July 29, police responded to reports of gunfire in an apartment building in Alexandria. They found her lying dead outside of her apartment. Police obtained a murder warrant for Bouachi on July 31st, found him in Maryland on Wednesday. The coronavirus pandemic has confounded authorities and elected officials from the local to national level. Justice system officials have attempted to balance the risk from the coronavirus to inmates with the increased risk to society if certain prisoners are allowed to be set free. So here we have one who's been set free and allegedly murders his accuser who put him in prison to begin with. Now, you couple that as well with what's going on in California. This is from WND.com that according to Fox News, California is apparently set to have released 17,600 prisoners because of the coronavirus pandemic, well more than it had originally planned to. The Associated Press reported Thursday that the state overshot the original estimate by 70%. That revelation came in court documents in a lawsuit. Representative of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation told Fox News, in total, 8,032 inmates have had their releases expedited, and overall we've reduced the total incarcerated population by more than 18,300 since March as a result of a suspension of county jail intake, the expedited release, and people released in accordance with their sentences. We're glad the governor is taking action to release more people. Jay Johnson, executive director of Californians for Safety and Justice, said in a statement last month, "This is absolutely critical for the health and safety of every Californian," Johnson said, "to many people incarcerated for too long in facilities that spread poor health." Well, folks, if you remember, last Friday in Crosstalk, we told you about among those prisoners released, 44-year-old Terabia Williams, serving out an 84 years to life sentence because of the murder, carjacking, and kidnapping of Kevin John Ruska Jr. Well, in February of 1998, Williams took Ruska hostage at a gunpoint, put him in the trunk of the car. We told you about this past Friday. Unhappy with this arrangement as it was, she shot him in the abdomen and drove from Washington State to Davis, California. He was still alive when they got to Davis, so she tied him to a chair, but was generous enough to leave one of his legs free so he could potentially get people's attention by stomping. Well, it didn't work, folks. He was found dead by the time he was discovered. So she was convicted of this crime in 2001, sentenced to 84 years to life, now 19 years later, free. Washington Examiner saying several San Francisco police have busted a meth lab in a hotel room that was rented out by the city to house frontline workers and a portion of its massive homeless population during the coronavirus pandemic. Friends, this is an amazing story. We're just seconds away from the break, so we're going to take the break. And I want to come back because this is another way California is using the money. Yeah, they're renting out hotel rooms for the city's homeless, but guess what? In one such room, we got a meth lab that's set up, and we find that there is public funding going to give certain drugs and alcohol to those that are being provided refuge within the hotel. We'll have more on this story after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, where do secular scientists say the universe came from?
You know, Chris, it sometimes tickles me when evolutionary scientists mock creation thinking for claiming that creation was ex nihilo or out of nothing. But then they turn around and talk about the Big Bang, when a single speck of matter exploded to form all the stars and galaxies and planets and people. But, you might ask, where did that speck come from? Some scientists now say it appeared out of nothing as a quantum fluctuation in a vacuum. In other words, matter appeared from nothing, and then it exploded. Which would you rather believe, evolution ex nihilo or creation ex nihilo? At least in creation, we have a God that is powerful enough to accomplish the job. And that's the Back to Genesis perspective.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and putting out a number of stories, matters going on to coronavirus that have not been touched on, and certainly matters in the news, but we're talking about California. California, and certainly part of the big log jam in Congress right now is over the money given to states and municipalities. And we're seeing how California is spending some of that money, giving money to illegal aliens in the state who didn't qualify under the prior stimulus. And then Washington Examiner tells us about San Francisco. The police busted a meth lab in a hotel room that was rented out by the city to house frontline workers and a portion of its massive homeless population during the coronavirus pandemic. Law enforcement responded to a 911 call about a strong chemical odor emanating from a guest room at the Civic Center Motor Inn on Saturday. So when police arrived, they found the ingredients for the drug along with other paraphernalia, arrested two people who were staying in the room. The hotel is taking part in the city's alternative housing program that was created in part to protect vulnerable populations, including people experiencing homelessness during the pandemic. San Francisco's program offers hotel rooms to those who have no place to quarantine during the pandemic, such as frontline workers who may live with people susceptible to the virus. Well, some hotels in California say, hey, we want none of this. We're refusing to participate. And so Los Angeles City Council voted this past May. They're shaming them. I mean, listing publicly hotels that refuse to house homeless people after the owners of the Ritz-Carlton downtown declined to take in homeless guests. Well, the city of San Francisco confirmed in May that it had been providing drugs to some of the homeless people who had moved into the hotels during the pandemic through meth. Though meth was not on the menu, the city used private funds, though, they say, to give them tobacco, marijuana, and alcohol while they're off the streets in quarantine. Some news came out yesterday from the Daily Wire about California's public health director resigned suddenly on Sunday night after unidentified failures in the state's coronavirus reporting system created a backlog of at least 300,000 unreported cases. Dr. Sonia Angel, who had held her position for less than a year, was one of the senior officials guiding the state's coronavirus response. She announced her resignation in a Sunday email sent to her staff at California Health and Human Service Agency that was released to the public. She didn't specify a reason for her departure, though it comes as the CHHSA, that's the California Health, investigating a reporting flaw. That's California Health and Human Services Agency. They investigating a reporting flaw in its coronavirus monitoring system that missed hundreds of thousands of cases. Their secretary, Dr. Mark Gailey, announced a massive tracking discrepancy Friday, saying that an antiquated reporting system combined with blunders by the government likely caused the backlog. Simply put, the system was not built for the kind of volume, Gailey said. In order to create a lasting solution, we're accelerating the development of a new laboratory reporting system for COVID-19. Well, Russia claiming to have a vaccination for COVID, and Putin is saying that his daughter was one of the recipients. This from Newsmax.com. Russia today became the first country to clear a coronavirus vaccine and declare it ready for use despite international skepticism. President Vladimir Putin said one of his daughters has already been inoculated. Putin emphasized that the vaccine underwent the necessary test and has proven efficient, offering a lasting immunity from the coronavirus. However, scientists at home and abroad have been sounding the alarm that the rush to start using the vaccine before phase 3 trials that normally last for months and involve thousands of people could backfire. Speaking at a government meeting Tuesday, Putin said that the vaccine has undergone proper testing. He said it was safe. The health ministry said in a statement that the vaccine is expected to provide immunity from the coronavirus for up to 2 years. Putin emphasized that vaccination would be voluntary. Russian authorities have said that medical workers, teachers, and other risk groups would be the first to be inoculated. The deputy prime minister said the vaccination of doctors could start as early as this month. Russian officials have said that large-scale production of the vaccine will start in September. Mass vaccination may begin as early as October. But amid their rush to become the first to create a vaccine, the U.S., Britain, and Canada had last month accused Russia of using hackers. Hackers to steal vaccine research from Western labs. And as the trials were declared completed, Questions arose from about the vaccine safety and effectiveness. Some experts scoffed at Russian authorities' assurances that the vaccine drug produced the desired immune response and caused no significant side effects, pointing out that such claims need to be backed by published scientific data. There's a lot of information missing on this supposed vaccination that Russia is claiming to have. Interesting story as well that came out yesterday from LifeSiteNews.com about a heated debate that continues over the emergency measures taken around the world to limit the spread of COVID-19. New data suggests that Sweden's oft-derided approach of not locking down may have paid off in the long run. The country of 10 million people has seen a total of 82,972 infections and 5,766 deaths. Unlike many nations, it never shut down. Never shut down at schools or economy, did not restrict individual freedoms to nearly the degree that's being seen in the United States and much of Europe. Their leaders faced a steady drumbeat of international condemnation as deaths curved upward from April through June, though the curve did flatten in July. Daily deaths fell to the low 30s in mid-June and now have been in single digits since July 20th. In April, Swedish epidemiologist Anders Tegnell complained to Nature magazine that Sweden started from the understanding that COVID-19 is not a disease that can be stopped or eradicated until a working vaccine is produced, and that widespread lockdowns would be incompatible with Swedish law, which are based on voluntary measures on individual responsibility. Closed down, lockdown, closing borders, nothing had a historical scientific basis, in my view, Tegnell said. We've looked at a number of European Union countries to see whether they have published any analysis of the effects of these measures before they were started, and we saw almost none. Though we need to point out as well that Tegnell acknowledged that Sweden underestimated the issues at care homes and how the measures would be applied. We should have controlled this more thoroughly. This was the same error infamously made in New York, suggesting that Sweden's overall early outlook was disproportionately impacted by nursing home deaths. Regarding its medical facilities, the Scandinavian country's approach was to keep hospital intensive care units from being overwhelmed with elderly patients who had a low chance of survival and keep them open for younger people, though should a surge occur in the virus. Such a surge did not happen, and the elderly were denied access to the unused facilities, and there were many deaths of the elderly. Matter of fact, they were not sending anyone to the hospital if they were maybe 65 and have many years to live. We were told not to send them in. Christian Post noted those suspected to have COVID-19 quickly placed on palliative care, given morphine and denied supplementary oxygen and IV fluids and nutrition. For many residents, that was a death sentence. Sweden's public health agency said that 48.9% of deaths were care home residents up to and including May the 14th, the BBC reported this month. Something also interesting going on. Many heard the news about Ohio's governor testing positive, but did you hear that on the same day he was tested to be negative? Ohio Governor Mike DeWine tested positive for COVID-19 on Thursday before testing negative later in the day using a different test, reported Western Journal. He was tested because he was scheduled to meet with President Trump and Trump's visit to Ohio. Test results can be affected by a variety of factors, including the type of test used, the quality of the sample, when it was taken, during the cause of the infection. DeWine initially received an antigen test. That's a type of rapid test that uses technology similar to screenings for flu or strep throat and other infections. But instead of detecting the virus itself, such tests look for proteins or antigens found on the surface of the virus. The test, which uses a nasal swab, takes about 15 minutes. A DeWine spokesman said a Quidel test was used for DeWine, and a spokesperson for that company is looking into the matter. Very interesting. I wonder what column he fits into. You know, because one test showed that he was positive, the next test showed negative. Are they putting him as a positive or as a negative on their state charts at this point? Here from Western Journal, we have a Palm Beach County Medical Examiner. A report reveals that a young nurse who passed away in April died from kidney infection, not from coronavirus. The report had been previous that she died from COVID, believed to have died from COVID, 33-year-old, but found that she died from complications of a kidney infection. She had been quarantined at home. Before she died, she was tested for COVID after reportedly being exposed to the virus while working at a hospital, but the test came back inconclusive, according to WPEC. Her health is not the first in Palm Beach County incorrectly believed to be caused by COVID-19. They examined a number of deaths in this one county and found 8 of the 581 cases not caused by coronavirus. And that's in the cases that they examined. By the way, this just came out today as well from Western Journal. All masks are not created equal at limiting the spread of coronavirus. A new study has found, with some being rated as worse than wearing no mask at all. Researchers at Duke University who performed the study, which was published in Science Advances, do not hold their report to be the final word on the effectiveness of the mask they examined, but rather the start of a conversation that can help Americans to make wise choices. The study found that the use of protective masks had been required during the coronavirus pandemic. It assumed that wearing such masks reduces the likelihood for an infected person to spread the disease, but many of these mask designs have not been tested in practice, the study found. They tested 14 masks, including the N95 mask that was professionally fitted to the wearer. Those are the top-grade masks used by healthcare workers and first responders, and found them to be, looked like those were the most effective mask. The Duke team had a speaker talk without wearing a mask, and they did various tests through the process, but the N95 mask worked the best, with surgical mask as a close second. And the less than effective list, folded bandanas, also less than effective, knitted mask. Again, this study was very clear that its results are not a final verdict. Hear that? Not a final verdict. But the scientists revealing that certain masks may be more dangerous than wearing none at all, even because of their containment of viruses and so forth itself. And certainly that is in the news. By the way, from thenewamerican.com, a Nashville, Tennessee councilwoman suggested last week that people who refuse to wear a mask in public be charged with murder. During a Wednesday virtual meeting of committees of the Nashville Metro Council at large, member Sharon Hurd addressed some remarks to Mike Jameson, the Nashville mayor, John Cooper's director of legislative affairs, who was in attendance, saying, "I work for an organization that if they pass a virus, then they are tried for murder or attempted murder if they are not told," said Hurt. "And this person who may very well pass this virus that's out in the air because it's not wearing a mask is basically doing the same thing to someone who contracts it and dies from it." Now, she likely is referring to her employment as executive director of StreetWorks. That's a Nashville HIV/AIDS nonprofit. But to press forward with her comments, "It seems to me that we have been more reactive as opposed to proactive, and a little too late, too little. Maybe there needs to be stronger legislation to say that if you do not wear a mask and you subject exposure of the virus to someone else, that there be some stronger penalty as it is in other viruses that are exposed." Well, one of those, again, is that of AIDS, which a person, according to her, can be tried for murder or attempted murder if they are not told. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be opening our lines in just a couple of minutes here, so stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Islam is on the rise all over the West, including America. In his compelling book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, author Erwin Lutzer believes that we have reached a tipping point. The spread of Islam is impacting the way we live, and this advancement of Islam poses a threat to our freedoms of speech and religion. But he says this time also offers Christians a powerful opportunity to share the gospel. In The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, Dr. Lutzer addresses several important issues, including the agenda that Islamists have for the West, how Islam's growing influence will affect you personally, and what the Church should be doing in response. He also gives a reminder that ultimately, the enduring truth of the cross will prevail. Copies of the book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, are available for a donation of $17 to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829 during regular office hours. Again, that number, toll-free, is 1-800-729-9829. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. There's another story that I'd like to share with you here today before we get to the phone lines. And it came out yesterday from the vaccinereaction.org. And it is regarding a hospital staff that are wearing sensor ID badges to track COVID-19. Now, basically, just an overview of this, there is sensor technology that's been used by hospitals to monitor hand-washing behaviors and keep track of expensive equipment, but the coronavirus pandemic has opened up a new application for contact tracing of COVID-19 cases. They've adding a sensor to the ID badges of staff. The medical technology company called SwipeSense enables hospitals to monitor employee movements, documents interaction with potential COVID-19 cases, and subsequently identifies contacts of COVID-19 positive cases. Despite intentions for providing valuable information, the technology also has an inherent potential for abuse of security and personal privacy. Seeking new ways to rapidly identify and contain cases of COVID-19, some hospitals are using existing sensor technology that's been repurposed to facilitate a contact tracing of staff members inside the hospital. Prior to the arrival of COVID-19, hospitals were using the sensors provided by the Chicago-based medical technology company to monitor best care practices, like how often they hand wash and consistency of bedside visits to patients and other things that they're keeping track of. Well, I find it interesting that SwipeSense had avoided using this technology for individual tracking application until the coronavirus pandemic set in. Technology was already there. When hospitals began reporting that staff were contracting COVID-19, SwipeSense's chief executive, Mert Isery, realized sensors added to ID badges could be used to track the movements of individual workers in the hospital, documenting potential COVID-19 exposures, and subsequently identifying any contacts associated with positive COVID-19 cases. One of the first hospitals to embrace the tracking system is Edward Elmhurst Health in Illinois, they report, where 3,600 hospital workers, doctors, and nurses agreed to try using the sensor-embedded badges. When one patient unexpectedly tested positive for COVID-19, the surveillance team was able to determine the number of people who had been in that patient's room. The 75 employees identified as being at risk were asked to be tested and to self-isolate for 72 hours. One contact employee tested positive, but isolation kept the virus from spreading further. Crediting the technology as well as other infection control practices, the hospital has reduced its rate of positive COVID-19 testing among staff from 17% at its peak in March to less than 1% in June, they report. Very interesting indeed. There is a lot that is going on. By the way, the headline that's coming forth from the Wisconsin State Journal, as opioid overdoses are increasing in Madison as a state linked to COVID-19 stress, as there's greater stress happening, there are more people turning to opioids, and as a result, overdosing. And we understand that some 838 deaths in 2018. Madison had 27 opioid overdose deaths this year. That's up from 17 during the same period last year. A 59% increase that could stem from additional stress and anxiety caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Wisconsin had 916 opioid overdose deaths last year. The health department announced last week, up from 838 in 2018, less than the record high of 932 in 2017. Many people turning to opioids, depression, suicide that is setting in at this time, and great controversy taking place in our nation's classroom. Should schools open or not? Should there be face-to-face in-classroom instruction taking place? Teachers' unions have gone the extra mile in producing supposed funerals, tombstones, making caskets at a recent demonstration as well. I'd like to get your input on so many of these issues here. It's been a while since we have focused just in on COVID, and maybe you've got some thoughts on the matter here today, and maybe thoughts on whether you believe there should be in-classroom instruction taking place. Maybe some thoughts you have on the test, the concern that's taking place over those who are given false positives on test, as well as those who are testing some who are saying that there are false negatives. Is the testing system reliable? As we found from the Ohio governor, testing positive one day, negative another. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Your comments on the issue here today on Crosstalk, and perhaps there is something that has been on your heart, your mind for some time on this issue that you would just like to have opportunity to say. Now is the opportunity to do so. Again, as we mentioned, there's a lot of controversy taking place in classrooms across the nation as well. Should we open, should we not open for in-classroom instruction taking place for this coming school year? Again, our number to Crosstalk today, 800-733-9829. Very interesting, as we shared with you last week as well, pertaining to Grace Community Church, John MacArthur's church. Last Sunday, he did hold services again, and this is how he started, saying, "Good morning, everyone. I'm so happy to welcome you to the Grace Community Church peaceful protest." Very interesting in that peaceful protests have found to be okay by government there, just don't meet in church. Let's begin in Monroe, Wisconsin. Mark, thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is more of a kind of a comment slash question, but, you know, based on the statistics for COVID-19 deaths, I'm curious, you made reference to a released prisoner that committed murder. I'm curious.
Allegedly.
And, you know, it's not to be absurd, but because this whole thing to me already is absurd in this whole COVID-19 extravaganza, my question and curiosity is based on is, would that death actually be considered a homicide or COVID-19 related as far as statistics go?
That's the question I don't have an answer to, Mark, because we're seeing some pretty bizarre things. We've seen people that have been killed in motorcycle accidents or collisions that have been listed as a COVID death or a drowning or such things taking place across the nation. And, yeah, that's a great question. How are they going to consider that death?
Well, I don't think there's any limit to the, what the left can conjure up in this thing. I mean, this is just, you know, it gets more absurd by the moment.
Thank you for the call here, Mark.
Thank you.
Let's go to Arizona. Manny, you're on the air.
Hey, what are your thoughts? I was listening to Brennan's show the other yesterday, and a caller said that they were planning to keep the schools and churches closed in order to force a ballot of voting. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the point made is that the majority of election places are taking place in schools and in churches, and certainly those are two entities that are being closed. We know that in certain locations where schools have been closed, they have opened up a room for voting. So I don't know that that is, I mean, it really does bear that question. Is there a purpose behind closing schools and churches to say, hey, we have no voting places that are available for us? That's a valid question to be asking. We have seen in cases where that there have been closures, that there have been certain areas opened up for the purpose of voting. Thank you, Manny.
Thank you.
Valerie in Chattanooga, Tennessee, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I was just concerned about COVID-19. It's all I'm hearing about. And we've had many, many other diseases that are a lot worse than this. And when God tells us that my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray, with all of the hot churches that we have, why haven't we come together to do that? I mean, we have churches that are so large, it makes the news. And with those numbers, I mean, it's power in prayer. And it's
yes.
Power in numbers. I just don't understand why the church is not coming together, because there's a lot of lies, I believe, about COVID-19. I just got out the hospital. I went in for a heart attack symptoms. And instead of doing everything, you know, to keep me from having a heart attack, they wanted to test me for COVID. I had no symptoms for none of them. And I addressed this to the doctor. I don't even have a symptom on the list for COVID, but I have all this chest pain. And then with all the churches, like, I don't know, like, we have no backbone. We're salt without savor. good for nothing. And so now they're just running right over because nobody's standing up except a few, and then they go to jail, and we don't even support those pastors.
Yeah, you've raised some good points here, Valerie. And first of all, let me say this. Lord willing, on Thursday's Crosstalk program, we are devoting, there are a couple of pastors that are launching a campaign encouraging people to be praying for the eradication of coronavirus, praying also for the elections coming up this
That's
November.
Great. I love that.
And this Thursday's emphasis is on that very issue, and we encourage you to be sure that you're listening to that program. But you're right. There are many other things. As we consider the number of deaths that have taken place this year pertaining to coronavirus, and when you start looking also at the number of deaths that are taking place over other diseases across the nation, you go to a system like Worldometers that communicable disease deaths this year have been over 7.9 million worldwide. Flu deaths, 298,000 deaths.
Yes.
We have abortions, over 26 million abortions this
wow.
year that have taken place.
Wow.
Deaths caused by HIV/AIDS, there have been over 1,029,571 is the current number on Worldometers. And then, there, of course, there are things like deaths caused by malaria. There's been over 600,000 deaths by that. Deaths caused by smoking this year, over 3 million such deaths. There's been over 1.5 million deaths by alcohol this year as well.
And they're keeping the bars open while they say, we got to stay home in the churches. But they open up the bars.
Yeah.
You can go to a bar and do all these things that the devil likes. Because he's the prince of the world, and this drug is made in a lab, you know, by the devil himself. And then just this drug, they attach it to authorities who are not doing God's will, but the devil's will, and it's running rapid. And I believe that that's what's actually going on, because like everything you just said,
why
isn't that a bigger issue? Especially killing a baby, saying that it's the mother's right for her body, but it's not her body ending up in a garbage can.
Yeah.
When she says she has a right to her body, well, how come her limbs, how come her arms and legs are not thrown in a garbage can, but it's another body? And what about the rights of that body?
Yes. You're right, Valerie. Thank you for the call.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Brian in South Dakota. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just want to encourage the saints, basically. We need to be careful not to fall to the presuppositions that are given. And specifically, I'm saying, you know, we keep hearing about this healthcare crisis, the pandemic crisis, COVID crisis. And we need to not even accept that at all. The crisis is a constitutional crisis. It's an individual rights crisis. It's an anti-Christ crisis. It's an economic crisis. And all those, everything I just mentioned, far exceeds, you know, the path of destruction from COVID itself. And that's really just kind of, so often we lose an argument before we even start it by accepting the presupposition that's given. And we need to be careful about that.
Brian, thank you.
Anyway, that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate raising the issue. Up against a break, we'll take more of your calls following here at Crosstalk. Our number 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website, worldviewreport.com. As you know, I interviewed Pastor Rob McCoy of the Calvary Chapel Church in Ventura County that has had a court hearing and gonna have more about contempt of court charges for holding his church service. Well, here's an update. He came back on our radio show this week, and the court date has been pushed off by a couple days. But listen, folks, there was actually talk of sending in sheriff deputies to shut down the church and make sure it could not open, going so far as to send in armed sheriff deputies to do whatever was necessary to make sure this church did not open again. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds like the kind of thing you'd expect in communist China or formerly behind the Iron Curtain. Thankfully, that's not happening right now. They'll have church this Sunday, but we need to continue to pray for Pastor Rob and his church because he's standing for churches across America. Because as one has said, what happens in California, well, so goes the rest of the nation if we're not careful.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. And again, friends, as I read those numbers earlier from Worldometers, check it out yourself at worldometers.info. There have been 300,000 more deaths this year caused by HIV/AIDS than from coronavirus worldwide. 300,000 more deaths. It's astronomical to see the worldwide again. There have been 742,016 COVID deaths at my last look, worldwide. And yet deaths caused by alcohol, over 1.5 million, more than double the deaths caused by alcohol. Why isn't we are not shutting down, as the caller said? Why are we not shutting down alcoholic establishments, liquor stores, and bars? No, those are called essential businesses. And yet more than double lives have been taken by alcohol this year alone, worldwide, than has COVID. Something's wrong. Caesar, in Zanesville, Ohio, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I just want to lay some facts down on you guys real quick here. First of all, they're not testing for COVID-19. What they're doing is they're testing for coronavirus antibodies, and about a third of your flu viruses are coronaviruses, so most everyone has antibodies already in them, which the antibody basically means you're immune. So all these new cases you're seeing, it's nothing more than a false flag to redistribute the wealth with the elites. So the bankers are running this. Your World Health Organization is run by pharmaceuticals, run by globalist bankers, the Federal Reserve, people like the Rothschilds. And they're the ones that are orchestrating this. This is really just a big, big hoax, honestly. Like you guys alluded to, there are more things to be concerned about than just this bioweapon.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. They've engineered a bioweapon to scare us into giving up our rights. That's about all. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you, Caesar. Appreciate your call here today. Four times as many people have died of smoking this year than have died of COVID. Four times as many. According to worldometers.info. Let's go to the state of Michigan. Lori, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. On the testing issue, I have family in another state. They said the neighbor is a nurse, and she came and told the neighborhood, people in the neighborhood, she said, we had 60 swabs that we never touched on anything. We sent them off to the lab, and they all came back positive. And this is the kind of stuff we're hearing.
Yeah, it is. And Lori, last week we had a medical doctor on who also spoke about sending in a swab from a piece of fruit, and that came back testing positive, too.
Yep.
Thank you for the call.
We know what they're up to.
Thank you, Lori.
You're welcome.
Lisa in Pensacola, you're on the air.
Yes. We have so much dark political propaganda regarding this virus. We don't know who to believe. We don't know what to believe. First they say it's negative, then they say it's positive. It's just, it's inflammatory information, and it's just causing fear to come across
yes.
the entire nation.
Yes, you're right, and that is part of the game plan. That's part of the MO here is to build fear across this nation, because fear equals control. And if we can keep people afraid, they will do what we say.
Exactly.
Thank you, Lisa. Let's go to Frank, calling from Octavia, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm kind of calling. I'm curious about this math situation regarding work. I mean, for 2 months, I wore the mask. I have some medical conditions, and I wore it under my nose at work. And everything went fine until three people in the factory came down with the corona. Then they gave me a face shield, because I could not cover my nose and mouth because mm-hmm. of a medical condition. And that went fine for 2 weeks. And then they sent me home. You have to wear a mask or you cannot work. So I asked them, I said, well, am I eligible for unemployment? I'm here. They said, no, you have to go through short-term disability. So 3 weeks later, I finally get the paperwork, and now they pass this bill with the 400 hours from our president, and I'm really in a loss here.
Yeah, and I don't know what. Well, they had the $600 that was proved passed by the Congress in the first package. That has expired, though. I don't know the effectiveness of or if they're going to follow through on the executive orders from the president in this regard, or if things are going to continue in stalemate fashion. I don't know the legality as to what qualifies as unemployment versus short-term disability in that regard. I wish I had answers. You may even connect with Citizens Council for Health Freedom. That's Twyla Braze, who's been with us a number of times, cchfreedom.org. And I know their website, their phone number is on there as well. To give you some guidance in that and even what your rights are with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that's another whole issue is the you're not able to tolerate that mask. So there may be some issues there, too. Thank you, Frank, for the call. Laura is calling from Hollywood, Maryland. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on. Just want to just point out something that I'm even dealing with in my own church about masks. You know, we are, as believers, should not have fear of death. And, you know, if people want to wear a mask, that's fine. But I feel like when you have somebody tell you to wear a mask, and if you don't wear a mask, you're not being a good witness to Christ, I think there's an issue there.
Okay. Thank you for your thoughts on that, Laura. Let's go to Mike in Menominee Falls. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. My sister had some friends that went to get tested, and they sat in line for quite a while, and they were waiting kind of too long, so they had to leave. Now, they had signed up when they got there. Well, after they left, I don't know how many days later, they got a letter in the mail saying that they tested positive for corona, and they hadn't even had the test. So there's some evidence for you.
My. They just stood in line. They were waiting to be tested.
But they never got tested.
Never got tested.
They took too long, and they had to leave.
And they got their letter back saying you're positive.
Yep.
My. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Al. Al, we got about 20 seconds. Go ahead.
20 seconds. Hey, Jim, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. And I'm glad that my radio station in Bridgeport is back on.
Yes.
Praise God for that. But, Jim, it's about these doctors that are falsifying these records. Listen, the devil's the prince of lies, and they're just lying just through their teeth right for him. And listen, if I had a heart attack today because I was worried about the corona, by golly, I died of corona, right?
Well, that's what's there. I'm out of time here, Al, and thank you for calling in on the broadcast. But we understand, as they have testified, there is financial incentive for hospitals to list U.S. COVID deaths. We're out of time. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.